that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelaine.
This is the Two Daft Yanks podcast. Greetings to you wherever you may be. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined from in the Polar Two Daft Yanks studios by my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelaine.
Yeah, another chilly day up here today on Groundhog Day. So happy Groundhog Day, everybody. I have it on good authority that I heard Sepp Blatter stepped out of the FIFA offices this week, saw his shadow. So unfortunately for everybody else, there's going to be six more years of FIFA corruption.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah. I also have it on good authority that Harry Redknapp made a last-minute bid to try and buy Punxsutawney Phil, but the bid fell through. So.
Oh, the dang fax machines, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, exactly. It's always the fax machine's fault.
Fax machine malfunctions. It's bad. So, all right, folks, welcome to the Two Daft Yanks podcast, TDY. And this is mainly we're going to talk about some transfers here. It's transfer deadline day, so let's give a round of applause for the window being closed. Thank God.
Yeah, which unfortunately. Oh, there it is.
There's what?
The applause. It was late. It was late on my end.
It was late for you. I think we're okay. Well, we're having. If this sounds weird, folks, we're having some kind of like internet Armageddon because it's cold here in Denver and you got the permafrost up there in Anchorage. So we're having some problems today. So
yeah, well, the internet
see
probably
how things go.
Yeah, the internet probably has Super Bowl commercial meme fatigues, so it's probably running a little slow.
That's true. Maybe all the bandwidth in America got sucked up yesterday.
Yes. Well, yeah, sucked up by the halftime show or something, but.
So we will see. So let's transfer deadline day, Corey. Let me just kind of go through some of the major deals that we saw today. And if I say a name that you want to talk about, stop me and we'll talk about them. Here's the major ones. We'll go in chronological order here. I'll mention them. Robert Huth, the defender, went from Stoke to Leicester City on loan. The most active team today in terms of money-wise was Chelsea. And they shipped out German international Andre Schürrle. So he moves from Chelsea back to Germany to Wolfsburg for £22 million. His replacement ended up being a Colombian, Juan, what's his dang name again? I already forget, Cuadrado.
Cuadrado, yeah.
Yes, Cuadrado from Fiorentina. He comes in from the Italian club for £23.3 million. So basically, that's a financial fair play type of deal. You know, they ship out Schürrle for 22, bring a guy in for 23 so they could balance the books. And as well, on the back of that, they loaned out Mohamed Salah to Fiorentina on loan as part of the Cuadrado deal. So two wieners out for Chelsea and one in.
Yeah, and apparently they made a few extra bucks, too, by selling Ryan Bertrand permanently, who was on loan at Southampton.
Correct, yes. I was going to get to that, but yes. So that is the Chelsea activity. Bertrand was at loan with the Saints, and that was made permanent in an undisclosed fee. Other moves of note include, this is a player that I really like, from Benfica. The attacking midfielder, he could play striker too. I think he could play in the wing. He could play, you know, attacking mid. He could play striker some even. It's Filip Juricic.
Whoa, look out now.
Yep. He's a good player.
It's kind
of. So we'll see how he gets on at Southampton. He's the type of player that Southampton's been bringing in, you know, a really young, talented guy who hasn't really put it all together. But, you know, Ronald Koeman is getting a lot out of these guys.
And I heard earlier that apparently he was either coached by or scouted by Koeman before when he was at Heerenveen or something. So
yes.
So it sounded kind of like another El Giro Ilya deal where, you know, Koeman knew him before and, you know, maybe able to get some more out of him since he kind of, not quite a failure at Benfica, but, not exactly lighting the world on fire either.
No, and not getting a lot of playing time. And Benfica's a pretty good club. One of the under-radar clubs, I think, in the world. They're pretty strong, especially for the Portuguese league.
Yeah, I would say they play in a weakened Portuguese league, but yeah, they're usually a pretty quality side.
Okay, other moves of note, and I didn't see this, but Lee Chun-Yong goes from Bolton to Crystal Palace for an undisclosed fee. So yeah, that's a guy who, sometimes he flashes quite a bit of talent, and then sometimes you don't even know he's on the field. So we'll see how he gets on at Crystal Palace.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say that he's probably one of those that I imagine Bolton didn't necessarily want to get rid of him, but since Bolton's kind of been stuck in the championship for a couple of years, they probably got to start clearing the books of people like Yong.
Yeah, especially with remember the championship.
Yeah, they have their own
down
fair
in
play.
Down in the Football League, they have more stringent financial fair play rules than they do in the Premier League. So that probably had a lot to do with it. All right, let's get to the rest of these here. Aaron Lennon goes to Everton on loan from Tottenham. And word is that there is a clause in that for Everton to buy in the summer. But I have not seen that officially, but that was the rumor. So Aaron Lennon, another guy who, tons of talent, played quite a bit for Tottenham, made over 350 appearances, I do believe, but just never really lived up to his full potential.
Yeah, well, he's, your typical English winger of the last 10, 15 years. Had really good seasons early on, picked up injuries here and there, and like you said, kind of, was never really a bad player, but just kind of plateaued after a bit.
Mm-hmm. And someone pretty much just like him, but, at a younger age, is Wilfried Zaha. He goes back to Crystal Palace for an undisclosed fee after going to Manchester United just, 2 years ago?
Yep.
So basically that was a very expensive two-year loan.
Yeah, because what he was bought for, it was like $14 million, if I remember correctly.
I think it
was
in between 10 and 15, yes.
Yeah, so, okay, well, let's just, even at the low end estimate, a player who was bought for £10 million who played all of a half an hour for Man United, modern mm-hmm. football.
And he still only has one goal in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So, but he's back at Palace.
I was going to say the vast majority of his appearances in the Premier League were on loan. It wasn't even for his parent club.
Correct. All right, so we already mentioned Bertrand. Other move, and they list this as major, but I don't know, and it is Tottenham getting MK Don's starlet, Dele Alli, who burst on the scene, I do believe it was last year in the League Cup when MK Don's – did they beat Manchester United? Is that correct? It was just a good game. I just remember. I can't remember exactly.
They won because, if I remember correctly, at the time on loan from Arsenal, Benik Afobe had like two goals.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And they won 4-1 or 4-0 or something.
But in that match, Ali bossed the midfield, and United was basically playing the best midfielders they had at the time. So he is 18 years old. He is on the English under 18 team. That fee is around £5 million, and he is one for the future. He is going back on loan to MK Dons for the rest of the year.
You stole my phrase. I was going to say hashtag one for the future.
Yes, but he's scored 12 goals in League One as a deep lying midfielder. So his comparisons is he's the next Steven Gerrard, is what the media says. Yeah.
There we go.
So we'll see. All right, here's a move that I kind of find odd. I know Darren Fletcher was rumored to go to West Ham for the longest time. Maybe, not the longest time, but, the past couple of weeks. For whatever reason, that move didn't go through, and he actually made a move today to West Brom on a free transfer.
Well, yeah, I imagine when you're still under contract, even if it's a free transfer, if I recall correctly, you still get paid. You basically get bought out. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, Yeah, basically your contract gets moved to that club. So, I mean, there's no transfer fee. So, but that's just kind of interesting that he did. But, you know, since his illness, Darren Fletcher, you know, has really hasn't had a chance to really play much for Manchester United. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do at West Brom at this point in time since, you know, basically he's had no to little impact the last, what, 4 or 5 years? Or am I going too far back?
Yeah, it was a little too far back. It was
maybe three?
Yeah, well, definitely the last 2 years because he had that intestinal problem, which he never I think he had like 2 or 3 surgeries to clear up some intestinal issue he had. And so he never really was kind of quite the same after those surgeries. But I kind of have a feeling that he's probably going to do well because obviously if he can get some game time because he's, you know, kind of the hard tackling, hard playing midfield that's going to fit fairly easily into a Tony Pulis system. So, like I said, if he can get some game time, that's probably a really good move for both parties. And I imagine he's one of those that he's being moved on by Van Gaal because, you know, Van Gaal's system, even the deeper line players and those holding midfielders have to have a little bit of skill, which, you know, obviously Daley Blind has, more technical skill than, you know, a Scottish hard playing midfielder like Darren Fletcher.
No doubt. All right. Now I scoured the rest of the world transfers and basically nothing of any note. I mean, some guys popped up, but nothing, you know, players that you and I would recognize because we follow this really closely, but nobody of any note that your average person is going to know about. In terms of other minor moves in England, our New England-related players, not New England. I say New England. I got New England on the brain, and we'll get on that.
I was going to say, in a Super Bowl Freudian slip.
Yeah, we'll get to that here in a minute. but Tim Cahill, MLS product, of course, as you all know. Ha, ha, ha.
Har, har, har.
He was let go, or mutual consent between him and the New York Red Bulls, and he has actually signed a contract with Shanghai in the Chinese League.
Shanghai?
Yeah. He got Shanghai to go to Shanghai.
Damn it, you stole my next line. I was about to say Cahill must have got Shanghai.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Shanghai out of New York. It's like the beginning of like a 1980s action movie or something.
Yeah. Starring the Mad Max guy. No, Kurt Russell. Not Mel Gibson, but Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Kurt Russell and Tim Cahill in Shanghai out of MLS. You know, like a professional athlete gets hijacked, and it's up to Kurt Russell to track him down and save his family.
Yes. All right, here's a bunch of transfers, but I want to save that for last. Other moves of note include Manchester United youngster Jesse Lingard going to Derby County on loan. Derby County. Going through the list here. There's a couple I want to talk about, but I want to get to others first. Tom Ince, who just, you know what, this summer or maybe the summer before, churned down a contract with AC Milan.
Inter Milan.
Inter Milan. One of the Milans. And he is now, he's a whole city player now, but he's on loan at Derby County as well. So that's a pretty sad thing for him. Going through the list here. Well, okay, I guess the Giovinco went official today. I didn't know that it wasn't official until today. It's interesting.
Especially with a strike on the horizon.
Oh, yeah, possibly. Another one whose girlfriend made a lot of waves, David Santon of Newcastle. He's on loan at Inter Milan after his girlfriend went on Twitter and raged about how he was frozen out. And he wanted to stay and fight for his place, but they basically told him, we don't want you anymore.
Interesting. Which, yeah, that's probably part of the soon-to-come revolution of getting all the French and Italian players out.
Perhaps. All right, I'm going through the list here. There's so many. Tons of loans, and this all happened on the last day, and we'll get to that next. That'll be our next conversation piece. Okay, this is the last one I'm going to talk about now. This is one of our favorite chants, Corey. It's going to be making a reappearance in England at Reading Football Club.
Oh, yeah.
And you will be hearing... You will be hearing the chant. Feed the yak.
Do it!
Feed the yak and he will score.
Yeah, it, man. Corey.
I don't know. How does that, what's the tune? I don't know the tune, actually.
Oh, well...
I just know it's feed the yak and he will score.
Well, yeah, and then it like morphs into yakety sacks or something. So it's like feed the yak and he will score. Feed the yak and he will score. Yakety yak. Feed the yak or something like
that. Oh, yeah, that's it. Uh-huh, good job.
Yeah, yeah.
So the yak is back in England at Reading, and they claim he's still only 32, but we all know like he's probably in his mid-50s.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely the Satchel Paige of soccer at this point. Him and Obafemi Martins, they're...
Yeah.
And what was the Ruben Sierra from baseball? Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, he's 35. Yeah, for the last 15 years.
Yeah. So the yak is back, so we'll see how he gets on. He's a goal scorer, so.
Yeah, he was quite the striker in his day. I mean, you know, never. I don't think he ever scored more than 20 goals, but he regularly scored, you know, 12, 13 goals a year at one point with Middlesbrough and Portsmouth. And I think he had 15 one year with Everton. And like I said, he was, on his day, he was quite the handful.
Mm-hmm. I like him. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. But yeah, I've never, I've probably seen him play almost 10 years. To this day, I still have no idea whether or not Yakubu is his first name or his last name.
I think it's his last name.
Well, yeah, but I think
but
he...
I was going to say,
I think he comes from a Nigerian tribe where it's like Korea. Your last name comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes by Yakubu, even though it's his last name.
I think his first name's Evgani.
Yeah, it's like Ayagbini or something.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's when you see it listed, it's usually listed Yakubu first. But like I said, I think that has something to do with whatever Nigerian tribe he's from. They actually put the surname first.
But we just call him the yak. And we
exactly.
know if you feed the yak, he will score.
Exactly. Don't worry about all that culture stuff. Just feed the yak.
All right. So now let's just talk about this transfer window here. A lot of talk. Now, you see, I was going through the list, and it took me forever because – and it seems like this is a broken record. Every time we do a transfer podcast on the deadline, we talk about – the window itself and ask the question, is it too long? Because as I say every time, and I'm sorry if you've listened to the pod for a while, you've heard me say this, but anytime you put some kind of artificial deadline on something, people will wait to the last minute to get that done because as a player, you're going to wait to see what all your options are before you decide to, you know, make a change if those are out there. So you wait to the very end. And as a club, unless you pay, you know, out of the nose money, another club's not going to accept an early offer because they want to, you know, play the field and see how much money they could get. So naturally, everything comes to the end. So in terms of this January window, what do you think about it? Do you think that it is that it's just right that we should have this winter window? Should we go back to the old system to where there was no window and you could have transfers, you know, clear down to the – what, 6 weeks left in the season?
I think it was usually like mid-March. I think was the cutoff date.
Mm-hmm. Or should we knock it down to 1 week in January or 2 weeks in January? Or should we get rid of the window altogether? Because this is a European argument that I hear a lot is, well, why should you be allowed to change your squad after the season starts? Hey, if you didn't get the right players in the summer, tough luck. So you should be smart enough, and it's all about this competitive advantage. They don't think it's fair for you to add to your squad in the middle of the season, which is a pretty interesting viewpoint. I don't agree with it, but it's out there. So what say you, sir?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's at certain clubs that would lead to having to have more youth players promoted. So, you know, if you're a strictly self-sufficient club argument guy, then, you know, maybe that's an argument that you're going to push, but me personally, as I stated on the summer pod and the one we did last January, I'm definitely a proponent of the old way where there is no window, because I do kind of think that having the two windows, not that it's an overt conspiracy with the media, but that having both windows kind of helps the media pump up all these transfer rumor stories. So I think there's a vested interest in them, you know, wanting the two windows. But like I said, I'm definitely a proponent of the older model where, like I said, there was no window per se, other than, you know, the season deadline that, like I said, usually cut off in, I think it was the middle of March. Because I personally think that is part of the reason that over the last 10, 15 years that's helped drive up the fees is the shortness of the windows. Although I could also understand the winner argument that if you want to shorten it, that would also, like you said, that would cut down on some of the procrastination in the winter window, because clubs are also loath to change their squads sometimes in the middle of the season or bring newer guys in, because it's going to be hard to integrate them in. So that's going to lead to more procrastination, both on the clubs and the, or maybe procrastination is not the right word, but you know, leading some clubs and agents to drag their feet, because like you said, they want to take as much time as possible to drive the fee up as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'd be okay with going to that, but, you know, since the change was made to have the two windows, the world has changed quite a bit in terms of media, and, you know, in the social media, and just the way everything is covered with, the 24-hour news cycle. So my fear is that if there was no – if the window was always open, then you would see these transfer – rumors would be nonstop. It would be just insane. And instead of just putting it up with it in the summer and in January, the transfers would actually drive, you know, overshadow the matches and that the actual season itself. Do you think that would be a problem in this new age of media? Or am I too sensitive to the subject?
For a year or two, and then at some point there would be some sort of fatigue, because obviously, at least in my opinion. Now, granted, I definitely think differently than most people, you know, because even after several summers of, you know, whatever the what was that study that somebody did last summer where the papers are only right about 6% of the time in their transfer rumors, you know, after one, maybe two summers of a 6% success rate, somebody like me is going to tune the media out and not read all the stupid rumors. And, you know, I basically go into almost a, you know, an ignorant mode over the summer now where, you know, I don't really start getting excited about transfers or possible transfers until they reach a certain stage. But, you know, in certain places, obviously that's, the transfer thing has, you know, it's kind of like recruiting in college football. It's almost become a sport or you know, like a sub sport in and of itself, where some people, you see some people on Twitter and online, and it's almost like they want to follow transfers more closely than the actual, you know, the actual matches of the club they supposedly support. So, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously there's those type of extremists, but, you know, at some point, I would think that the public at large would go, you know, after several years of 8 months of these knuckleheads being wrong, why are we listening to these people in the media? But then again, maybe I'm wrong, so who knows?
Yeah, no, I think your theory has some credence, I do believe, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I really don't know. I mean, I could see it going either way where people would, you know, get sick of it over time, or I could see the media ramping it up to just where farcical proportions, which is possible. To, you know, once people fatigue of it, I could see them, you know, going way over the top and just making it just bad. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer, but it's interesting to think about.
Well, it's from a media standpoint, to me, it's kind of like and maybe this is a little out of the box. Maybe this is a little too out of the box, but it's kind of like the media fatigue that some people get when it comes to weather scares. And you know, there's both of us coming from a geography background, know exactly about well actual studies that have been done that you have things such as hurricane warning fatigue, to where if you have all these warnings of hurricanes for 2 or 3 years and nothing happens, well, then all of a sudden people that live in hurricane areas, the next time that there's a big scare, there's a certain percentage that go, oh, these people don't know what they're talking about, which is kind of what happened with Katrina, is that after years of all these warning scares in New Orleans, when storms didn't hit, there was a certain percentage of the population that quit listening to all the warnings, and that's what led to a lot of the a lot of the problems post storm. So, like I said, maybe I would kind of expect that similar mindset to happen over time. But then again, obviously, sports is its own animal, and like I said, there are those people out there that like I said, you can see online, and they definitely like transfers more than the actual games that the clubs play. You know, like the joke meme that was floating around two summers ago, that transfers and spending money is the new trophy, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So, good thoughts there. So, the transfer window is closed. As I said, thank goodness. Now we can focus back on the actual play on the field, and it's going to be a really interesting end of the season. But actually, I forgot to say this when we were talking about the transfer, so I guess we have one more thing to mention. Now, we did mention a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the Newcastle managerial situation, mm-hmm. about Mike Ashley and his quest to gain a stake in Rangers Football Club. Well, last week, he finally got through. He now owns a pretty good portion in Rangers, which is going to keep them from going into admin again. And with that now in place, guess what happened today on transfer deadline day?
A whole host of people from Newcastle went on loan to Rangers.
Exactly. So all the fringe players and some of the top youth players at Newcastle have gone on loan to Rangers. So something to note of. It's just kind of an odd situation to see stuff like that. But I guess it's no different than a team having obviously Chelsea does it. People don't know that Chelsea owns a minor stake in a lot of teams, and that's where they farm out their players to. So it's something that I think you're going to see more of probably over time as clubs realize the value of that.
Well, yeah, well, and especially because a lot of lower clubs struggle with finances, it's a way to prop up some of those clubs, for 5 or 6 extra years. Over time, we may see a more integrated sort of quasi-minor league system like you would get over here. That's one of those I can't really – obviously, we both listened to TalkSport a little today, and Stan and his buddy were boo-hooing about it for the most of their show today. But that's one of those, if you don't want guys to have stakes in other clubs, then you have to come up with some FA rule about you can't have multiple or stakes in multiple clubs. So again, maybe it's the Louisiana in me, but I can't ever fault somebody for finding things in the rules. And even though I, to some people, it's hypocritical that that I mock Chelsea and clubs like City for finding loopholes in FFP, at the same time, I also understand the fact that, hey, if they're smart enough to find those loopholes, then, good on them. And, if you don't like it, then close the loopholes or, make rules that stop certain things. Because another thing they were complaining about is the number of players from one club that can go to, the same club on loan, where, again, that's a simple fix. If you don't like that, then, if you think 4 from one club is too much, then make it 2. said, if the rule is four, you know, then I can't blame somebody for taking four players on loan, because that's the freaking, you know, max limit of a rule.
And I think that is around the max limit, because they did change that after last year with Watford.
Yeah,
who have the same owners.
I was going to say, it used to be six, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I forget, which club does Watford affiliated with in Italy?
I believe it was Udinese.
Udinese, yes, you're right. So they did address that. So I think the limit is four or five. So if that's the limit, that's the limit. I have no problem with that. That's a good number.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. They recently changed it, and the guys on the radio were still bitching about it. It's like, yeah, well.
But I think the Udinese was bad. I think Watford had like eight guys or ten guys or something ridiculous.
Well, yeah. Well, because they had they were getting around it because they had the stake in Watford. There was some kind of loophole to where some of the loans, even though they were coming from Udinese, were actually like in nation loans, which were technically separate, even though they were coming from the same club or something.
Yeah. So I want to get back to so what is the rule right now in terms of ownership? I know it's a little confusing. Is it basically that you can't have a majority stake in two clubs?
Correct.
That are going to be in the same. Well, I heard it a lot linked to like Champions League play. Like, you can't be the majority owner of two teams that are in the Champions League, because then you're going to have to boot one out.
Well, no. I don't think it's just Champions League. If I remember correctly, it's you can't have a certain percentage stake in clubs in the same competition, which is why clubs like Chelsea.
Okay, yes, I know. Yeah, could it be Europa League?
Right,
as well?
So which is why clubs like Chelsea try to get stakes in clubs in other countries, and especially clubs like their stake is in Vitesse. Vitesse has never been in the Champions League, so and they're in a league that's dominated by Ajax, PSV, and Feyenoord, and AZ and 20. So you have five clubs that generally fight for two Champions League spots. So the club they bought a stake in, you know, has only a small chance of making the Champions League. So like I said, just to make a short story long, that's why clubs like that look for lower league clubs or clubs overseas, is because, you know, there's less chance of those clubs being in the same competition as a team. And yeah, when I say some same competition in league competitions like the Champions League or, you know, Premier League, et cetera, not cup, because obviously they're all going to be in the same domestic cup competitions.
No, correct. But, yeah, but I could see, you know, that's bad. But what happens if Vitesse someday gets good enough, there's a fluke, and they get in the Champions League? That would be terrible for their, you know, their supporters and most of their players to say, hey, sorry, Chelsea qualified, and you're getting the boot.
Well, no. Well, what would happen is they would have to buy their stake out. They would have to buy out their stake from Chelsea.
Oh, they could. I guess that's one way to view it. But would that happen? Would Chelsea do that? I don't know.
What's that?
I said, would Chelsea do that?
Well, they would have to, because if they're the owning company, then they're either going to have to take the penalty or take the buyout, because, like I said, they're the parent company, so.
Yeah, I'm saying that Roman would just say, yeah, fine, boot him.
Oh, well, yeah, well, there's always that possibility, too.
Yeah, that's what I think would happen. No doubt. I don't think he would sell to keep him in. He doesn't care about them.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously, if he wants to fight that political battle, then that's on him, but, you know.
So, all right. Well, there we go. So that's an interesting conversation. Unplanned, but good.
Yeah.
So, and that's what you get here at TDY. We go down rabbit holes galore. Or I guess in this day, we got to say groundhog holes or burrows. I don't know what's the correct term. Burrows, probably.
Yeah, I believe it's burrows.
I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not a groundhog expert.
Nor am I, but, you know.
But we play one on a soccer podcast.
Well, I was going to say, I'm usually good at faking things, but I didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn last night, so I can't even, you know, fall back on that.
So, all right, we went way too long on that. I wanted to get that through, but that's fine. That's the major topic today, is all this transfer stuff. And so we'll breeze through the rest of our content, and we will start here with
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
Braver than a matador in high heels in a pink tutu. Braver than a bullfighter with no knickers on.
How daft.
Oh, that's right, folks. This Week in Daftness is back.
Yeah, several weeks in and Daft Lady's sticking around. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've set her up with some very nice accommodations.
Oh, a nice selection of macro brews, which we may get into later.
Oh, probably not. We're going to skip that. But we will get into this. This Week in Daftness has a Super Bowl theme. We have three themes to cover.
Oh, we're selling out.
And this is bad. I know, but we have to talk about this. Now, it's not a big deal, all of this, but I do think that it's going in a direction that we really don't want to go. And that is the NFL-ication of soccer in this country. And I guess even worldwide now, if you think about it. Now, the number one is ha-ha-ha. It was an honest mistake. But the Daily Mail this morning proclaimed in their headline that the New England Revolution beat the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl, which is Don Garber's dream. Don Garber, you got it so good. You want to be like the NFL so much. Hey, you did it. You got a MLS team winning the Super Bowl. Congratulations, Don Garber. Let's give a round of applause for him. Wow. Wow, a soccer team beat an NFL team for the Super Bowl. Unbelievable.
Yeah, well, they don't call it a daily fail for nothing.
So they since fixed that, but if you look at the URL, it still says New England Revolution. So they didn't fix the URL,
nice.
Which is a rookie mistake. You got to edit that too, you knuckleheads. So that's daft. You're daft, Daily Mail.
Yeah, well, that's all soccer needs is Tom Brady to come in and ruin the rules of soccer too. You all of a sudden you can't tackle somebody, you know.
The Brady rule, yeah.
That's on the ball. Yeah, you got to, like his damn quarterback bubble rule that, that was foisted on the NFL about 10 years ago. Now, you can only intercept passes. You can't actually tackle the number 10.
Well, I like that, the playmaker. Yeah, each team gets a designated playmaker that wears like a special sticker or something, and you can't tackle that player. Ooh, I like that.
It'll be a patch of Tom Brady's face that you'll have to wear like a captain's armband.
Oh, man, we shouldn't say these things because Garber may listen and get bad ideas.
Oh, he's got minions scribbling this in a notebook as we speak.
They may implement this. All right, second in This Week in Daftness, continuing our Super Bowl theme. As I said, I hit Twitter, but a lot of people caught it. It's not a big deal, but it makes no sense to me. NBC Soccer on Saturday and Sunday, I do believe. I don't remember Sunday very well, but
they were there both days.
Saturday, NBC Soccer crew was live at the Super Bowl. Why does the NBC Soccer crew, who is usually based out of New York City, need to go to the side of the Super Bowl? And what was funny was, basically, there was nobody there but a small group of Arsenal fans.
Yeah!
Somehow they knew, yeah. They were there with their Arsenal flags and scarves, like, what, six of them or something? Maybe eight?
It was at least a half dozen.
Okay. Anyway, that's just weird. Like, why? Why NBC? And I'm not blaming, Rebecca or the two Robbies. Obviously, they had no decision in this. They went to where they were supposed to go. But why NBC? Why do we need to cross-pollinate? How many people are going to be watching soccer and say, you know what? I think I'm going to watch the Super Bowl on an American network? I mean, come on. Do you really need to advertise the Super Bowl in the United States of America on a soccer morning? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just speaking of Super Bowl commercials, I was just surprised that Katy Perry was the halftime performance, because it's not like NBC ran a commercial every 3 minutes announcing the fact.
Yes. Well, there's that too. But it's just weird. I don't know. Why do we have to promote the NFL during the soccer? Now, also, I don't know if this was on purpose. I forgot about this. This popped in my head. That several times during the Chelsea-Manchester City match, which we'll talk about here next, they would mention the Super Bowl. Are the white Fleetwood, and it wasn't Graham with him. It was somebody else.
Yeah, it was Grahamless, so...
Oh, was it? Okay. I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Oh, there were definite... It was noticeable that not only did they mention the Super Bowl, they, quote-unquote, jokingly worked in a few football-like references.
I know, and that was not by accident, folks. Trust me, this is by
definitely wasn't
order.
By accident.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, I understand, but still, I don't understand why we have to... The Super Bowl doesn't need advertising at a soccer match.
Well, yeah, because even the match that Lee Dixon did, he jokingly said something about, what did he say? Something about getting a first down or something.
Oh, and geez, I didn't see that. Wow.
And he you could tell he was kind of like, what the hell am I talking about?
They're forcing me.
Well, exactly. It made it definitely seem like, oh, I got to talk, you know, I gotta talk from this unwritten script about American football. But yeah, it was definitely noticeable how much they talked about the Super Bowl and American football during the EPL broadcast this weekend.
And then every time they did talk about it, they would pop up the, you know, in the corner of the screen, the little reminder, hey, don't miss the Super Bowl. Like, come on. Like, really? Is this really happening?
Yeah, no, like I said, it was definitely noticeable to me. Like I said, I definitely caught on quick to their charade, or at least what I think their charade was.
It was, yes. Now, the only thing, now I said this on Twitter too, I go, okay, I have no problem with this, as long as NBC follows through, I said, and I go, if you're going to cross-promote, if the EPL is going to have to advertise the Super Bowl, then if NBC is fully on board with soccer, then there's no reason for them not to run a, hey, you enjoy the Super Bowl? Well, watch the world's most popular game on NBC. Watch the EPL. But they didn't. During the actual game, there was no mention of soccer. There was no commercial NBC. You know, they owned the advertising time. They could have put it on there, said, hey, you enjoying this? Well, this is nothing compared to the EPL, the world's most popular league. What do they estimate? 650 million people worldwide
watch
Chelsea, Manchester City. And we're talking the Super Bowl is not even half that.
Yeah, which what I thought that I think I saw something that the number of people that watched the Chelsea Man City match was going to be triple the estimated audience of the Super Bowl.
Exactly. So I was hoping, okay, if they're going to cross promote, well, let's have this go both ways. And I know this is ticky tacky, but this in the end, this actually does matter, because if you're going to treat soccer like a redheaded stepchild and force, you know, Arlo White and Graham Lasso, who are two, you know, very professional, high-quality commentators, to talk about the Super Bowl just because it's on NBC, that's ridiculous. That's daft.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't even have to be like a full commercial or even those, you know, those half commercials that they run sometimes going in and out of the break. You know, it could be a five-second promo spot as you come back or as you exit into a commercial break, you know?
Exactly. It could easily be done.
And there's there's so many damn pop-up things during American broadcast now. You could use it as a damn pop-up, pop-up promo ad by the scoreboard, while you're in the 40 seconds while you're waiting for a play to be run.
Exactly, and they couldn't even do that.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, now the third is the most mockery ever. And this is someone we talk about, the Men in Blazers. My goodness. Now, I do believe they actually, to be fair, I do believe they were advertising. I didn't see it because I don't watch Super Bowl pregame, you know, the 18 hours that they have.
Oh, yeah.
But I do believe the Men in Blazers were on at some point on Sunday during the pregame. But today, and I do believe in the pregame, they put together a starting 11 soccer team based with NFL players. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Why do we need to do this? Now, I know, it's supposed to be fun, but why? Okay, why not? How come we don't put an NFL team together based out of European footballers? As I said, go both ways here. This cross-promotion stuff, actually, it's not cross-promotion. It's one-way promotion, really.
Well, but and not only is it cross-promotion, but it's cross-promoting to kind of like the lowest common denominator in that, because this is the thing I can't get like some of my friends that don't like soccer to understand, is that you don't have to like soccer because it's like this sport or like this other sport or this and that. You can like it for its own thing, and that's, you know, now again, maybe this is just the way I think about sports, but I don't like hockey because it's played like soccer or played like basketball with the free movement. I like hockey for hockey, and that's what I don't understand about these cross promotions, is that, you know, you don't have to like soccer because you know, there's a lot of running and skill like there is in certain other sports or whatever, you know, so you don't have to necessarily play to you know, a common denominator of another sports fan. Now, granted, some people would argue, and, you know, maybe they're right and maybe I'm wrong, that that's the only way that you're going to get casual fans. But then again, I'm one of those people, I don't want casual fans in my sport. Casual fans are the ones who ruin sports. And I know, or ruin a particular sport. And I know people aren't going to like when I say that, but like I said, I'm one of those, you know, I'm one of those snobs. I don't want casual fans in my sport.
Well, that's definitely what they're going to for, no doubt, as the casual fan. But as I said, why do you need – the NFL doesn't need advertising on a soccer broadcast. I'll say that 1,000 times, because why? What? I mean, who's watching soccer in this country who's not watching the NFL? I would say that's a very, 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 very small demographic.
Well, I was going to say maybe some African immigrants in D.C. who – don't care about the NFL anyway, so.
That's true, yeah. So anyway, all right, we already gave that. See, we fell into NBC's trap. We're talking about this.
Oh, yeah.
We should have just ignored it, right?
Well, but it does kind of come into a greater argument that, you know, about the growth of soccer and the popularity of soccer in this country. And, you know, I know you've heard me bang on this argument for years, is that, you know, I have no problem if soccer remains a niche sport. You don't have to compete with other leagues. There's nothing wrong with having a quality niche product. Having a quality niche product is better than if you have a crappy macro product, you know? You know, like we were making fun of Budweiser before we came on the air. Yeah, they sell a hell of a lot more than the microbrews, and they can mock the microbrews all they want. The microbrews freaking taste way better. So it's, like I said, it's the same thing.
Yep. All right. Let's move on.
Moving on.
That was good. That was good. And now, as I said, we're recording this. Now, I haven't heard a lot of people, but, you know, other shows and other podcasts. So I don't know if other people hit on this. And as I said, I don't want to sound ticky-tacky, but this whole trying to force the NFL on soccer and NFL thought, it's just weird to me. I don't like it. So we'll move on, though. Let's talk about some actual football and what was labeled as the biggest game of the year. And I don't know what you think about that, if that was true or not, but Chelsea and Man City drew 1-1. Chelsea scored the first goal of the game, right? And it was Loic Remy, the French international, with a nice goal off some very nice passing, but some pretty bad defending, too. I thought nobody really pointed that out. Manchester City completely switched off, especially Vincent Kompany, who, after being named, you know, EPL Player of the Year just 2 years ago, is a shadow of his former self. And then David Silva got a redirected goal off a shot that was going wide by Sergio Aguero. So Chelsea-Man City goes 1-1 at Stamford Bridge. What are your thoughts on the match, Corey?
Yeah, Kompany's non-attempted clearance, I thought at first it was pretty pathetic, but when I look at the – when I saw the replay, I know we've talked about before that we think he's been carrying some sort of long-term injury that hasn't been disclosed to the public, and – after seeing the replay, I'm pretty convinced of it now, because there was no reason for him to pull back. You know, because I know on the broadcast they talked about, well, maybe he thought he was going to have a chance of an own goal, but, you know, if if you're considered a world-class defender, even in that position, I don't think that should have been a concern. So when I, like I said, when I watched the replay a few times, it almost looks like he pulls back his leg from the clearance, not because he thinks it's going to be an own goal, but it's almost like he was trying to protect his groin or his leg or something from like some sort of extension that may aggravate the injury that we think he's carrying, that, you know, that they're not telling people.
Mm-hmm. And the backside of the defense too, which I do believe was Clichy and D. Michaelis, they let a runner come in late, completely unmarked, to the post, which allowed for them, when that ball got through past company, allowed for the easy tap-in from Loic Remy.
Well, yeah, because like you said, I mean, company was in position for the clearance, but at the same time, Remy was in space in front of Di Michaelis. So, yeah, I mean, it was definitely pretty poor defending all around.
But that happens, you know. As I said, I don't want to take anything away from Chelsea, but a lot of people are like, oh, that was – I mean, it was good passing. But really, if Manchester City plays to the standard that we've seen them play before, that shouldn't have been a goal. They usually covered that. So, but in terms of the results, what do you think, you know, a win would have given Chelsea a 8-point lead over Manchester City, who's in second place, but the draw keeps the status quo at 5. Do you think that the title race between these two is well and alive?
Not particularly, because I do think that Chelsea was happy with the draw at home, and, you know, I laughed listening to the pregame that, you know, of course, a couple of the pundits, one of which was Robbie Earle, was, oh, I think Chelsea's going to come out and try to attack because they're at home. And like I said, I sit there and chuckle every time they talk about that. When Mourinho, you know, when Mourinho is basically playing with house money, which is, you know, the lead he has on Man City right now, he's going to be okay with a draw because psychologically, even though they're at home, you know, he's always going to be okay with keeping that distance because he, you know, as long as the distance remains the same, that's going to allow him to continue to play the mind games. And obviously if he gets the 3 points, well then that's even better. But like I said, I definitely think he was okay with the draw because, like I said, now it's going to allow him to continue to play the mind games with everybody. And that, frankly, Man City's, you know, they're definitely, I mean, obviously there's quality in the side, but they're definitely going through a noticeable period where, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of that post-holiday period slump that a lot of clubs go through, whether it's fatigue or, you know, whether it's being jaded from you know, recent results or having to go to the UAE in the middle of the season for a, you know, a meaningless friendly or, well, you know, meaningless to the players, but, you know, contractual obligation to the sponsor. So like I said, I think with all the stuff on both clubs' horizons, I'm pretty sure Mourinho was more than happy than getting the draw. So,
no, I'm sure of that. And with the Manchester City, I think you're missing the most important thing.
That Claudio Reyna no longer plays for him? I don't know.
No, Yaya Toure is on.
Oh well, yeah.
African Cup of Nations duty. So I mean, that would have had a massive impact as well, because he's really kind of, I view him as kind of the heart and soul of that team.
The talisman.
Well, yeah. I don't know if he's. I mean, yeah. Well, let's talk about talisman. Is that really? See, I kind of view that more as the goal scorer.
Well, the talisman is usually the guy that's the heart and soul of the team, whether it's goals or not. The Stevie G, Captain Fantastic, or
I gotcha.
Joey okay. Barton, you know, kicking his team forward, literally.
That's fair, yeah. but also, to get back in terms of Chelsea, fair play to them, you know. A lot of times, even at home, you would see Mourinho bunker it down. But they didn't bunker it down at all. They were trying. They were literally trying to win that game just as well as Man City was.
Well, yeah, well, I was gonna say I don't know. He didn't have the bus parked, but he's I don't know. At least to me, it's still look. He still had the taxi on speed dial ready at any moment.
Okay, maybe that's fair too. But I mean, he didn't bunker it down like we've seen him bunker it down in the past. So,
that's my only point. Let me rephrase that. I guess my point was they didn't come out and attack nearly as much as the pundits before the game made it sound like they were.
Oh well, because the pundits are clueless. Yes. As you said, you're right. They're like, oh, they're going to attack. Like, how many times do we hear that? And you're like, no, it's Mourinho.
Yeah, I was going to say Mourinho. Attack. Yeah, it's all about the end result with him, you know. Mm-hmm.
So, all right, I got one last thing here. Now we're going to interject some Daftness into the show because we have to, because we are the two Daphne Inks.
Yeah. Now, never get enough.
Now Lampard came on late in the game, right? And everybody was hashtag, you know, Gabe Lampard game winner. You know, I tweeted, everybody was tweeting. It was not original thought, but now he didn't get it, unfortunately. But I do have some advice for Manchester City, and for I guess Money Grab Football Club, aka NYCFC, in the future here. Now a lot of feelings have been hurt, right, with this him not moving there right away. You know, the preseason for Money Grab has started. He is not there. Now, I guess it's official now that he is going there in the summer, but I'll still only believe it when I see it type of thing, you know?
Yep. So I'm in the same boat.
Okay, but if he really wants to heal it, this is what he should do from here on until he scores the next goal. He needs to have a special shirt underneath his jersey. Now listen to this. Now next time he scores a goal, he needs to go ballistic, dancing around, get in front of the cameras, pull up his shirt to show an MLS logo. And that would heal. That would heal all this hurt. And he would become an instant MLS legend. Now he'd probably get fined and maybe even suspended. I don't know. But it would be worth it. If he wants to heal all the pain that he's caused to all the MLS fanboys, Lampard, next time you score a goal, lift up your shirt to show an MLS logo. What do you think about that? That's some free marketing advice right there. It would be huge if he did that. Would it not? It would be viral everywhere. It'd be nuts.
Well, yeah, because I agree. Because, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the New York fans, there's a pretty good bit of them that were definitely soured on that whole Lampard deal, but you know, I'm thinking, even with that, how awkward is it going to be when he finally promises to play for New York, shows up, and the MLS strike is still going on?
Well, that's true, and we'll get to that.
And then he has to get loaned back to Man City to keep match fitness, and there's scenes everywhere, and dogs and cats fighting, and end of the world again, and just craziness.
Maybe yes, and sometime here in February, we hope to have a guest that I've got lined up. We'll set a date, and we will talk about some pretty interesting things that we never talked about in this show, but it's a big thing. And we'll talk to him about the MLS labor situation, because I don't think it will be solved anytime soon. So that's a good point, though. So we'll see. So anyway, that's some free advice for Lamps and his team to become, you know, to kind of heal these wounds. Now, if this happens, man, that'd be awesome. Anyway. All right, man, this has been a great show so far. We've kind of been going on and on here, and we're a little longer than I'd like to be, but you cannot stop quality content, can you, sir?
No.
No, I think we're doing pretty good. So let's take a look at the future here, what is coming up here in the next week, which we will be talking about. Now, you have a bunch of midweek FA Cup replays that begin. This is Monday. We're recording here, Groundhog Day, of course, as we've mentioned several times. But we do have FA Cup replays on Tuesday and Wednesday. And here's what's on the dial. Fulham will be hosting Sunderland. Sheffield United will be hosting Preston. Manchester United will be hosting Cambridge United. And the big payday for them, those are the Tuesday matches. And on Wednesday, the lone matches, Bolton hosting Liverpool. So, I know, I'll just throw it out there. Do you think, of the two big headliners, I guess, do you think Cambridge could go into Manchester United and pull off a result? And do you think Liverpool can get a result in Bolton after each side's getting a draw in the first FA Cup fixture?
Yes, as well as Cambridge played in their first match, yeah, they're not getting a result in Old Trafford. I mean, as much as I would love that, yeah, they're going to lose probably 3-0 or whatever I predicted on the Nuggets a week ago. 3-0, 4-0, 4-1, something like that.
Mm-hmm. What about Liverpool?
You know, Liverpool...
What do you think about their
chances? Yeah, that's Bolton has a better chance of beating Liverpool than Cambridge does beating Manchester United at Old Trafford, but also not going to happen, especially with Daniel Sturridge coming back.
Exactly, yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Sturridge starts that match or not, coming off the bench in the past weekend and scoring a goal in his first appearance since August, which I couldn't remember that he's been out that long, so that's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
doesn't seem like that long to me,
he got hurt right around that first international break or something, I thought, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly.
So, yeah, you would imagine that if Sturridge is healthy, which we think he is, and especially if he starts, that Bolton would be in a little bit of trouble.
Well, I don't know. Is it maybe Tim Ream will have him in his back pocket?
Maybe, yeah. USA International.
Yeah.
Tim Ream. And do they got white bread, too? I call him white bread.
You know, I think White Bread went somewhere else. I think he left Bolton.
Okay. Well, I forget. I think you're right. All right. Other coming up on the weekend is awesome Saturday. You're going to have to get up early if you are in the mountain time zone like me or on the West Coast or in – what is the name of your time zone even? I don't know. Is it the Alaskan time zone or does it have a different name?
Nope. Alaskan time zone.
Or if you're in the Alaskan time zone, you're going to have to get up early for – what Corey and I have been looking forward to, the North London Derby.
Yeah!
Which, you know, I don't know about you, but...
Fear the awful.
I don't even... I mean, I've heard this from both sides. I don't even... But there's just so much expectation, and it means so much now. With, you know, both teams, you know, finishing within a point or two of each other most of the years. This match is very hard for me to watch. I can't enjoy it at all. It's very hard for me to enjoy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to start a new cult of post result. But yeah, I don't go nearly into the nervous tizzies during a match. Now, granted, if y'all win, I'll be pissed off. But yeah, during a match, I see that a lot nowadays, and that's something I don't understand. I guess it's the same kind of nervousness that some people have when they watch their kids play sports and they have a hard time watching. But to me, if you get that nervous during a match, I don't understand why you watch sports. Because, like I said, to me, the whole point of liking sports is getting enjoyment. So if there's nervousness that took to the point where it's hard to watch, maybe you need to see a therapist. I don't know.
All right. Well, you convinced me. I'm not watching now. Just going to sleep in, not watch, and not wake up and find out that we lost, probably.
Yeah, I don't know, because depending on what I end up doing, I might sleep, or I might try to stay up all the way through and watch, because freaking birthday this weekend, and damn schedule makers had to go and put the North London Derby early.
So that match is the first on Saturday, the North London Derby. Followed by the Merseyside Derby. And I'm trying to remember, I'm looking up here now, who's hosting that. Everton is. It's at Everton. It's just across the park. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, just
the stadiums are what, like 2 miles apart or not even that?
Yeah, I think they're barely a mile apart.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So Everton will be hosting Liverpool in the Merseyside Derby, so that's going to be an excellent morning for everybody, so get up. And chances are you won't see any NFL mentions because the next NFL game is not until August, and that's preseason. So, but you never know. They may be, hey, don't miss the NFL preseason in August.
Yeah, or maybe you'll see a new promo for a new NBC show coming this fall, Men in Shoulder Pads.
Men in Shoulder Pads. Well, I like it. And they could get I don't know.
Yeah, two Brits talking about American football.
Men in shoulder pads.
Well, you know, it's either that or men in jock straps or, you know, men in quarterback flak jackets.
I don't know. Or men charged with domestic violence.
Whoa, no, no.
Oh, yeah, is that crossing the line? I'm sorry.
Yeah, come on. NFL's trying to get away from that.
All right. So that's the weekend. And also, we didn't talk about it because we didn't have time. We didn't want to get into it. But maybe next week we will talk about the U.S. men's national team. They play Sunday as well in a home match, I do believe, in Los Angeles against Panama.
Oh, it's on the weekend? Maybe I'll remember that they're playing this time.
Yeah, it's on Sunday, next Sunday. USA Panama after loss to Chile.
Well, yeah, I was a daft Yank last time. I was so daft I forgot we were playing midweek.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, another bit of news is midweek last week that we didn't talk about the final of the first silverware to be handed out in this English league season. The League Cup final has been set. Chelsea saw off Liverpool in 120 minutes in the second leg.
And 50,000 handbags and ruckuses.
Yeah, ruckusai, I think it is. So Chelsea is through to the League Cup final, as well as Tottenham Hotspur, and also another pretty interesting match with the late winner against upstart League One side Sheffield United, the Blades.
Yeah, I'll say you weren't lying when you told me that Sheffield was plucky.
They are plucky. They
nearly won the tie.
They've beaten six Premier League teams in the past calendar, no, not calendar year, like 18 months, which is pretty impressive. They have no fear when they come up, but they didn't beat Spurs either time, thank goodness. So Spurs are through to the final, and just like I've been waiting to play this a long time, this is equal time here. When I think you guys made it to the Carling Cup final, well, it was the Carling Cup back then, this is the Capital One Cup, I made it the FA Cup, we played that horrible Arsenal, like, reggaeton song.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you picked an Arsenal song that even I didn't like, so.
Okay, well, sorry, I didn't consult you. It was the one I could find. But now we're playing the very famous, from Spurs musician legends, Chaz and Dave. The Spurs are on their way to Wembley. So let's crank it up. Oh, isn't that beautiful? The sounds of Chaz and Dave when every year, you know, they did songs. Oh, this is from the early 80s. It's a classic. The Spurs are on their way to Wembley, Corey.
For me to poop on.
Okay. All right. So, that's all. Thank you for listening. Transfer window's closed. For Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Spurs are on their way to Wembley. Yeah!
Toulouse.